What kinds of content from your friends makes you feel the most meaningfully connected to them? For example, is it seeing a blurry photo of them from like a fun night? Or is it seeing a long reflection from them on like a private blog? Or is it getting a text from them?
Welcome back to Bamboo and Glass, a space where we share the underrepresented perspectives that shape our lifelong journey of learning and unlearning. I'm Tan.
And I'm Sophia. We love sharing stories about Asian Americans discovering the abundant possibilities of who they can choose to be in their careers, families, relationships, etc. Social media has been an important way for Tan and I and many of our guests to discover inspiration for who we can be, to connect with loved ones, to share our stories, and to meet people around the world who resonate with our stories and want to continue the conversation about topics like mental health, about career, families, identity, and so much more. And so today we wanted to talk about some innovation in the social media space.
Yes, so if you did not know, Sophia and I actually met over Facebook and have been in a long-distance friendship for 9 years now. And one of our first episodes 3.5 years ago was called Making Friends Online. And back then, I think we talked a little bit about how we used Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat in order to stay connected with friends, and that's how we made friends. And the social media landscape has changed so much, especially if you are on apps like TikTok. You probably know that so many apps have shown up, especially during the pandemic. And there's even more apps that I'm not aware of that Sophia is going to educate us all on.
Yeah, so today we are going to break down some interesting trends in the social media space. And Tan, I'm going to introduce you to two social media apps that I've been trying. So I am really excited to talk to you about this because you and I use social media a bit differently. We prefer different platforms for different reasons. And so I'm excited to see which apps resonate with you. And for anyone who's listening, you don't have to know anything about tech or product building to enjoy this episode. I will explain everything from the very beginning.
Okay, social media 101, let's go.
So I'll first talk about some trends in the social media space. Most of us probably started using Facebook or Instagram, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 years or so ago. And I would describe that experience of connecting with friends as a network graph based experience. And now we've kind of shifted from network graph to interest graph. So I'll give you an example of network graph and interest graph and what those differences are. So network graph means that you're using this platform to connect with people who you know in real life, your classmates or your coworkers. So think like Facebook, iMessage, Snap, right? You're not like discovering new, you're not really like discovering new people to connect with or discovering interests to connect with. You're kind of just connecting with people who you already know in real life. And that's very different from the interest graph, which is connecting with people or accounts that discuss your interests, regardless of if you know those people in real life or not. So if you want to go somewhere to learn more about cooking or skincare or crypto or the film industry, you'll probably use TikTok and you'll probably use YouTube, right? So those are places where you're not really connecting with your friends, but discovering people around the world who share your interests. And then there are apps that kind of serve as both. I would say both Twitter and Instagram have components of like a network graph experience and also an interest graph experience. I've seen this shift in social media apps in general, and I'm curious for you, Tan, do you see yourself using more interest graph based apps today than you did like 10 years ago?
Yeah, I don't think I use any of the examples that you gave for network graphs.
Yes.
I do overall for interest graph, I do overall still use Instagram as a way to connect with friends. TikTok was one where I consciously made the effort to not actually sync my contacts, because I was curious what would show up, and not, especially not being influenced by other friends' interests. Mm-hmm. And I think that also aligns with my social outside experience of in college, there's so many people that you want to connect with just on the fact that you are in close proximity to one another and you're having a shared college experience. Mm-hmm. And then I think leaving college, that's when I've noticed more of my interests diverge from a lot of my friends' interests. And so there's been more of a craving to get to know people with similar interests as me over keeping in touch with people. Because now those modes of communication have been established.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. When Facebook was first founded, the idea was that the content you're most interested in seeing is the content that your friends are sharing. But with Facebook, there became this trend of adding every single person you know. So people might have like hundreds or even thousands of friends on Facebook, and you have different levels of interest in keeping in touch with them, which is why I think interest graph or interest-based networks have become more interesting. So another trend has been just thinking about breaking down social apps into three categories. So one is one-to-one interactions, which is like iMessage, texting, Messenger, versus one-to-many, which is like if you create a TikTok account, you're speaking and a lot of people are engaging with your content, but they're not really engaging with each other in the comment section as much. And then there's many-to-many platforms where it's like a Facebook group where you're all in the same group together and you're all discussing among each other, or a Discord server. It can also feel like a many-to-many platform. The third trend is thinking about all the different attributes or dimensions of content. So content can be in different, can come in different mediums, can be short form versus long form. It can be live content versus like past content, or you can have live engagement versus async engagement with audiences. And I wanted to break this down because I think there's so many different dimensions of content, and you can kind of create a new social media app just by coming up with a new combination of all of these. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of medium, there's text, photo, video, audio. I would say back 10 years ago when we were using Facebook, text and maybe photo were the big ones. And with YouTube, long form video is the big one. And now short form video and audio are really popular new types of medium. TikTok, Instagram Reels, YouTube Shorts, Clubhouse, even podcasting kind of became popular more recently. There's also, you can take those and break it down to short form versus long form content, right? Short form video versus long form video, short form audio versus long form audio. For example, I would consider Clubhouse. It kind of feels more short form in that like you can kind of pop in and out, whereas with a podcast episode, you kind of listen to the whole thing. There's also short form and long form text, where short form text might be Twitter, long form text might be reading a blog or like Substack, like you're pretty familiar with. And then another dimension of content is when you're sharing an update, are you sharing something that's happening in the moment or something that already happened in the past? Something that you might be sharing in the moment would be like a TikTok live or an Instagram live. Whereas for past content, that would look like uploading a photo that you took earlier in the day to your Instagram story, something like that. And then there's also thinking about live engagement versus asynchronous engagement with your audience. So it's not just about the timing of your content, but also like, are you interacting with your audience in real time, or is there more of an asynchronous ongoing interaction with your audience? So there's like live engagement, which would be like Instagram live, TikTok live, a phone call, a Clubhouse conversation. And there's also async, which would be an edited podcast, for example, when we put something out there and then people listen at their own time and engage with us in their own time. Just curious for your first reaction into this breakdown of all the ways that content can show up.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to have this all floating in my head and to kind of just like, I don't think anything is surprising about what you've said so far, but I think seeing it all laid out, I can really see what you just said about how a new social media app could be created just by taking a different combination of these subsets that haven't been done before.
Yeah, totally. Like one really good example is Snapchat. When Snapchat stories first came about, it was so innovative because, you know, everyone had been posting photos with their friends, but Snapchat went from persistent content to ephemeral content. And that was just like a whole new category of an app, right? And so that was like such a memorable moment for me in like my journey of using social media was like when Snapchat came on the scene. There's also a trend of going from really polished content to more authentic content. 5 years ago, when we went on Instagram, we really liked following those really polished, beautiful grid set up Instagram pages, really aesthetic. And now it's kind of more about like, just more authentic in the moment content. People don't really like staged content as much. They don't really trust influencers as much. One way you can see this shift from polished to authentic, one way you can see this manifest is in the rise of Finstas. A lot of people started creating a Finsta, which is like a fake Instagram. Instead of like sharing content with the followers that they've grown over like years and years, now they just create a small Finsta with a couple followers just for their friends, where they share their like unpolished funny moments. And also you can see on TikTok, I think Gen Z is a lot more into the more authentic content. Like sometimes on TikTok, I'll just see someone turn on their camera and it looks like they just got out of bed. Their hair is messy. There's no makeup on and they're just like making a video for millions of people to watch and they're comfortable with that. Another trend is thinking about bundling versus unbundling. So bundling is when you take all these different features and abilities and put it into one app. And unbundling is when you actually take one app that feels maybe a little bit bloated and you split it up into multiple apps. So Instagram would be an app that is very bundled. There are so many things in it. You can just look at photos, you can DM people, you can have reels, you can look at influencers, look at your friends. There's so much things going on there. And it's really powerful. It's really convenient. It can fend off competitors. But a lot of users feel like there's just too much going on Instagram and we kind of want it to split up. It just feels too bloated. I don't even know what Instagram is for. It's just a mishmash of a bunch of things. And then on the other end, bundling is when you can take an app that feels really simple and add some other components to it. Like, so for example, I would say that chat is usually a feature that a lot of social apps like to eventually include, because chat, when you're like messaging with your friends, it's a very high touch, frequently used and engaging tool. And if you can get people to chat inside your platform, if you chat with me on Snapchat, I'm going to open the messages a lot. I'm going to respond to you. It like spurs a lot of downstream engagement on the tool. And so I think a lot of social apps eventually do enjoy adding chat to it. The last trend I wanted to talk about is distrust of social platforms. You might often hear people say, ugh, Instagram is trying to suck me in. Beauty filters mess with my self-esteem. They're just selling my data to advertisers. I don't even get to see what I want anymore. I just see what the algorithm pushes me. So in general, there's a lot of like frustration with social platforms, which makes it so that there's a lot of opportunity for new social platforms to come in. Mm. Cool. I know I just went through a bunch of additional trends there. Any reactions or thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've seen all of these trends happening. I think the bundling, unbundling is interesting because that always calls the question for me of like, okay, like what would be that balancing point of like, mm-hmm. you are bundled enough, but not to the point where like you should consider unbundling. Mm-hmm. I feel like usually when I hear about companies, they are always talking about scaling up, high growth, thinking about things in like a competitive sense of, mm-hmm. this app has this really cool feature. This is something that this established app should add in order to be competitive with the new and upcoming app. That's interesting because they'll do that. And then I think what ends up happening a lot of time is that there's too much going on in one place, at least mm-hmm. for my perspective. And so I don't know what the difference would be between, or what the balancing act would be when it comes to bundling and unbundling. Mm-hmm. The other thing I was thinking about with going from more polished to authentic, I feel like there is still a polished element sometimes when you see those like aesthetic vibey vlogs on TikTok, yes. where it's still like day in a life, but it's like more of the hygge, like very aesthetic layouts at your desk, but it's less highlight really, because it's not like a bunch of influencers going on like brand trips to Europe or to Asia or anything, but it still is polished in that sense of like giving, offering you a vibe that apparently you've achieved in your own household. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think in general, authenticity is celebrated more, but there is still a lot of very polished, very highly edited content. Another example on TikTok would be those fashion haul videos where people mm-hmm. spend a ton of time putting on a shirt, snapping their fingers, and then boom, they have a different outfit on. Like that yeah. is very polished content, and that takes a very long time to create.
Mm-hmm, definitely. And there's even like aspects of that where with those fashion hauls, where did you get the money to like buy all mm-hmm. of those clothes even, right? So ultimately the people who are able to deliver that are honestly like probably going to come from a different background from like the average consumer. There is like this level of unrelatability between influencers. Mm. No matter like how much they try to be relatable, they're just in a different economic bracket. They're in a different state of their life compared to, you know, a middle schooler who's just trying to like get her homework done every mm-hmm. single day. So there is a difference there. And then the authentic label is also interesting because I see it in the ways that you mentioned where people are like, okay, getting out of bed and not having any makeup on and like their hair is all tussled and stuff. I've also seen authentic in the terms of like very reactive content, people kind of just like saying everything before they think about what they want to say. And that's really interesting because maybe this is where I feel like I'm aging myself because I usually hesitate to share those types of reactive thoughts online just so impulsively because I have a bigger fear of things that I say kind of nipping me in the butt later on and that just having already been out on the internet. So that is really interesting that the trend has been more people being open to sharing those in-process thoughts, but in a way that can be very reactive and impulsive.
Yeah. Back to what you were saying about the balance of bundling versus unbundling. I have sort of a hot take. I think a lot of people don't like having Instagram reels because they're like, oh, they're just copying TikTok. Blah. But I find the most joy and meaning out of consuming content when I have an easy way to share it with my friends and see recommendations from my friends. Mm-hmm. An example would be like on Facebook. I don't really browse Facebook, but if a friend tags me in a meme, I'm going to open Facebook right away and check out the meme, right? So similar to you, on TikTok, I don't like connecting with my friends. Like I have a very specific persona. I feel like I'm like trying out content, like trying out things on TikTok. And I just would do not want any of my friends to follow me on TikTok, right? Where Instagram, it's like, okay, I'm cool with my friends following me there. The fact that reels are on Instagram makes it really easy for me to see good content and share it. Whereas on TikTok, if I see really good content on TikTok, and I want to share it with a friend who I'm not connected to on TikTok, I'm not going to share it with them.
Yeah.
Whereas I like love receiving reels from my friends on Instagram and sending reels to my friends too. So
yeah,
that's my little hot take about how I think reels is like a good move.
I do like the cross-platform sharing ability. So how you can just easily share a TikTok on Instagram because like you said, I don't connect with friends on TikTok. And so if there is something that I want to share with my established community of people that I do know and friends that I do keep up with, I can just easily share that to like my Instagram stories. And that's really nice. And so that is something that I think is kind of revolutionary in the last like five, 6 years that we kind of take for granted now. But I appreciate that there is this easy ability to just click on like share to Instagram. It immediately opens up the app. And then I'm able to have a seamless workflow and interaction in order to share all that content. That wasn't the same thing before where you kind of had to pick and choose like what you wanted to share on which platform.
Yeah, that's actually another interesting trend or like strategic question for social apps. It's let's just say there's a lot of good content on TikTok. How do you encourage more people to sign up for TikTok? Do you kind of gatekeep the content and force people to sign up for TikTok before they can see it? Or do you just put a watermark on it and allow anyone to share that video because then people will slowly associate TikTok equals fun content and then you'll get more people signing up in the long run. So yeah, that's also an interesting trade-off there. That's a really good
point. So clearly you've thought a lot about these trends and you have a wealth of knowledge around this. And we've talked a lot about how, you know, there's always some apps that are at the top dominating the landscape, but there are so many apps that are up and coming all the time. And TikTok, I think, is an unusual tool that I can think of as like an app that has really become wildly popular to the level of Instagram and Facebook in the last like 2-3 years. So what do you kind of think people should consider when it comes to building a new social tool? Like what are just some challenges, some things that average consumer might not be thinking about when they see like this new social app come up?
Yeah, totally. So you might think, oh, these are interesting trends. I have some ideas. Okay, well, there's also some challenges to building the next big social tool. The first one is the cold start problem. It's really hard for a user to fully enjoy a social app if there isn't existing interesting content. And that could be in the form of content that their friends share, like on Instagram, or content that strangers share, like your TikTok For You page. So how do you motivate those first people who sign up for your app to discover content and or create content, which is even better? So Clubhouse solved this problem with exclusivity. There is a long wait list. You had to be invited by someone who was on Clubhouse. And so by the time you got on there, you were just so excited. You were just like wanted to spend all your time on there and talk a lot on there. TikTok solves this cold start problem by developing the best recommendation algorithm in the world, which motivates people to create content in the hopes that they're going to build a following really, really quickly in the way that they couldn't build a following on YouTube or on Instagram. Another way to kind of solve that cold start problem is you'll notice that a lot of apps ask you to sign up with your phone number rather than your username and your password. And that's really powerful because when you sign up with your phone number and you give them access to your contacts, they can tell you what other friends are already on the platform and make it really easy for you to connect with them. Another way to solve or address the cold start problem is by paying for content. Some platforms like Snapchat, Spotlight, they paid people for content. And I think YouTube Shorts is also paying for content as well. Another way is this strategy called, like, I would call give and take, which is as a user, you have to share content in order to see other content. Makes me feel like, okay, if I'm curious about what my friends are posting here, I have to share first and then I can see their content, which makes it such that that kind of forces a piece of content out of me for other people to then engage with.
Yeah, that's really cool. I like all of these solutions that you brought up. I'm curious because we did a whole episode about Clubhouse and you mentioned that Clubhouse had this really cool way of being exclusive that really enticed people to be interested. I would say that Clubhouse is not as popular now. Like, I'm not on Clubhouse. I don't think you're on Clubhouse. What do you think went wrong with Clubhouse?
I think that the exclusivity led people to be very excited about being on the platform, but then they also kind of felt like they had to show off once they got on the platform. Because you kind of assume, oh, everyone else on this platform is like part of some secret circle who got onto Clubhouse first. And so I have to impress them. So I think that was one thing that I think a lot of people don't like Clubhouse because they felt like people were just taking up so much freaking space and humble bragging a lot. Like always jumping on stage and trying to talk.
Ooh, it's kind of like the performance factor of Instagram back in the day. And yeah, I feel like the rhetoric around Clubhouse was also to like become an influencer on Clubhouse, like a lot of people. And it's interesting because you wouldn't necessarily think that when it comes to not even seeing people's faces and just hearing people talk. But then I feel like there was a lot of social capital when it came to like being a charismatic speaker on Clubhouse,
right?
And being involved in a lot of rooms.
Yeah, Clubhouse actually rolled out or started talking about their creator program in February or March, which is about 2 months after I got on the app. And I think that really made people think about, oh my gosh, there's a chance for me to become like the first, you know, Clubhouse creator. And Clubhouse is also an app that was pretty well funded and had a very high valuation in Silicon Valley. And so I think people thought very highly of the app and thought like really, really wanted to make sure they could jump on this train as quickly as possible. I think there are many other reasons that I can think of, but the one that comes to mind first is people just having that anxiety and excitement to perform and look their very, very best. So it kind of felt like LinkedIn in a way. At its worst, it felt kind of like LinkedIn. At its best, there were some really authentic conversations, but it's hard for me to think of what were the moments or features that set up the more authentic conversations. Ah, Clubhouse.
Yeah.
What a time. What a time.
All right. What are some other considerations when it comes to building a new social app?
Another consideration is the trade-off between quality of content and volume of content. So if you lower the barrier to creation, that's great. More people will probably create. But then will videos and content become less interesting and less engaging to watch? On the other hand, if you lower the barrier to creation, maybe that'll also lead to more authentic content. I'll give you an example of how this trade-off plays out in real life. So Snap Spotlight, right? So Snapchat, its core original use case was send a quick photo to your friends. It should be very casual and very like unperformative. But now Snap Spotlight is kind of the opposite. So Snap Spotlight is kind of like TikTok in that it's a way for you to discover content from around the world that's public, that anyone can post. My hypothesis about why Spotlight hasn't really taken off is that Snap's core use case is sharing quick updates with your friends. Talon, if you send me like a really blurry and quick video of your lunch, okay, I could be interested in that because I care about you, your friends. I'm like, oh, Talon's eating like, you know, ramen for lunch. But a lot of people are taking content that they send to their friends and reposting it on Spotlight. And it's like, okay, just because I'm interested in a blurry photo of your lunch doesn't mean I'm interested in like a blurry photo or video of someone else's lunch, right? And so I think because people were so used to creating very quick and casual content on Snapchat, it's kind of hard for that same content to do well in Spotlight. I think TikTok is an app that has really taken this trade-off of quality and volume of content. They've done it really well. TikTok has really powerful editing tools, which lower the barrier of creating content. But because the tools are so powerful, they don't lower the quality of content. For example, one of my favorite features is the ability to create kind of like those like aesthetic little video mini vlogs where you can pick a soundtrack, pick like 10 photos, you upload the photos and it auto syncs the photos to the audio. And so it's so fast. You just pick your favorite song and then TikTok handles the timing of the photos and the transition from photo to photo. And I think that's a really good example of having a very low barrier to creating content, but still enabling high quality content to be created. The next consideration is that balance of creating a platform that's easy to use, but also novel. So easy to use and familiar layouts or interactions are really great because it can help you learn the tool really easily. But they can also feel reminiscent of the apps you're trying to break away from, which might be kind of unhelpful. Mm-hmm. And I'll get into an example of that later. Another consideration is, okay, let's just say, Tan, you tried a new app and you really loved it. If I'm the app creator, I have to think about how do I help you make it as easy as possible to nudge all of your friends to move on to a new platform? Because for you, it might feel a little bit vulnerable for you to like stick your neck out there and be like, hey, friends, I'm going to ask everyone to move on to a new platform, right? Like as the app and as the platform, I have to make it as easy and fun for you as possible to bring other people on. Yeah. And then another consideration is if you're building a new platform, there's probably a differentiator, something new that you're doing. Is that differentiator valuable and also complete with Snap Stories? That ephemeral photo is a really good idea, but you might want to think about like, is that feature itself complete enough to be a whole separate app, or are there other features that you need to add to make people to make it possible for people to like really fully enjoy that feature that you created?
Thank you so much for all of the details and insights about social media apps. I'm excited to now get into the real example apps that you want to talk about that most people probably haven't heard about.
I'm going to talk about two apps. The first one is called Be Real. There's this trend of people wanting to get like an honest, unfiltered, and unpolished look into their friends' lives. And so how do we enable and how do we encourage people to share that kind of content? So how does Be Real do this? I'll just walk through how the app works. Every day, every user gets a notification at about the same time, and the notification prompts them to post a front and back photo, which is you like take a photo and it uses your front camera and back facing camera at the same time and compiles it into like a single like image. Mm-hmm. No filters, no stickers, just the photo. If you miss the notification, that's okay. You can post late, but the app is going to say like, oh, Tan posted this photo 6 hours late. Because the whole idea is they want you to post in the moment you receive the notification to get that like authentic look like, oh my gosh, at 12 p.m., this is exactly what Sophia was doing. Uh-huh. Another interesting thing is like you cannot double tap like a photo. You actually have to write a comment or take a reaction selfie to that photo. And so it encourages like a little bit higher engagement. Mm-hmm. It also only lets you post once a day, which means that you probably only check the app once a day. And there's not so much anxiety about missing content because everyone you're following also posts once a day too. And so it then kind of pushes back against that negative impression that Instagram has, which is like, oh my God, Instagram is all about sucking you into the app for hours and hours. Well, this app doesn't do that. It doesn't make that possible. And then users can share their photos with their friends, or they can allow their photo to be posted in the Discover page, which means that it's public for anyone else to discover. And another thing is you have to post your photo of the day in order to see all the photos your friends posted that day.
Interesting. So I'm kind of curious for these front and back photos. Are they interesting? Because I'm just like, if I got a notification at like 9 a.m. in the morning, probably just at my laptop. So it's probably not that interesting. I'm probably the same every single day.
Yes, that is actually a great point, and one of the reasons that I am not super into this app. So this is how the front... I haven't posted a Be Real yet, so I can't show you exactly what it looks like. But essentially, there's like a big photo and then a small photo in the corner. You can choose which one is the front and which one's the back-facing photo. Uh-huh. And for most of my friends, if they're taking the photo in the moment, it's my friends are working most of the day. Mm-hmm. And so the front-facing camera is just them looking kind of tired at the laptop. The back-facing camera is their laptop. Oh, and the content is pretty repetitive.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. I do kind of like the idea of only being able to post once a day. And so I don't have that anxiety over missing content that my friends have been posting, because I know if I've seen it once, I've seen it all the times. But yeah, I think the repetitive content would really lose my interest quickly, because especially if your circle are people who work a 9-to-5 job, I feel like there's probably not that much variation. Like, I can see how this would be really cool if you were in a community of a bunch of digital nomads and you are working in like a different place all the time, and you just are, it kind of reminds me of like 1 second a day videos. Yes. Apps. It kind of reminds me of that, and it's really cool that you would be able to do that. But I think the nice thing about the 1 second a day is that you have like the full day to decide like what that 1 second is going to be. If I get this notification, I'm supposed to like post that at like the same time, it kind of would encourage me to then break out of a routine that I've worked so hard to establish for myself.
Yeah. I think this app has really taken off on college campuses because I think for most people, their 9-to-5 is very different. You have a different class schedule every day, different sports schedule every day. And so it's far more interesting. Whereas for me and for most of my friends, we're just literally the content is exactly the same every single day.
It's the same. And it's also even more the same if you're working from home because you don't have like the fancy cafes at work or the fancy foods that you could even be looking at or like the nice view. You just have your desk that your ergonomic desk and chair that you've gotten from work money. Yeah,
exactly.
Interesting. Okay.
All right. I have quite a bit of critique that I want your take on.
Okay.
Okay. First critique is I do not like sharing content just for the sake of sharing content. And I don't like knowing that my friends are sharing content just because a notification is asking them to and just because they want to see other content. If I'm receiving a message from a friend, I want to know that it came from them wanting to share something with me, right? Whether that's a text where it's very one-to-one and very personal, or even like an Instagram story, like there's some amount of intention and like free will, I guess, in posting that. But when I see something on Be Real, I'm just like, they're probably posting this because a notification told them to, or they're probably posting this because they are just curious about what other people have posted. And so it just feels inauthentic in a very different way.
One pushback would be that a very small subset of people in this world would want to be on this app. And I think I can imagine as someone who wants to be on an app like this, maybe wants that forcing function of like, you know, being held accountable to like post something every single day and to keep in touch with friends in an engaging way other than just a, hey, how are you? Or like, have a good day. I don't really like the restriction on like, you can't use filters or effects or anything, because I think that could be like a cool way for people to exercise their creative juices if part of it is like, you know, creating interesting content. If it's just the photo, then I feel like I could waste a lot of time just like trying to find good lighting, trying to find an interesting thing to like show off. And that's not a really good use of my time, in my opinion. Personally, I would like to have more variety and options in terms of what I would be posting on the app. But again, I think it's like a really cool forcing function because they say consistency is key when it comes to like making content and like, you know, keeping in touch with friends. And right now, most of the ways that I know how to do it is like just by having a habit tracker, by putting it on my calendar for myself. But to know that there is a network of like, you know, close friends maybe that are doing the same things, then I would probably feel more compelled and more interested in doing that. And I would think I don't think I would have the same thoughts as you because I would know that they chose to be on this app consciously.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. I totally agree with what you said about filters versus stickers, and I actually think filters and stickers are very different. I don't really mind seeing my friends with a filter on. I think there's like an aspect of creativity and fun to it, and like we all have, yes, I understand that filters can be bad for your self-esteem or whatever, but I think it's very different seeing celebrities with filters and full makeup versus seeing my friends who are picking a filter just because they want to look, make their photo look more like interesting. I don't actually mind the filters. And I think with stickers are fun. Like, you know, if you type in Happy Monday into your Jiffy, whatever sticker library, I think people, there's so many options. And like the one that you pick kind of reflects your personality a little bit. And so I think, I don't know, I think that those stickers would actually make the content a lot more interesting to look at. Like a laptop photo with a sticker just feels a lot more better, like a lot better than just a laptop photo. I really liked your point about consistency. I think this could be really good for digital nomads. It could also be really good if you're in like some sort of creator accountability group or something where like every day you have to post a video of you writing a new page of your book or writing a new page of your script. That type of consistency could be really meaningful.
What do you like about this app?
I like that the content has to be reciprocal. You have to share something in order to see what other people are seeing. Because I think something that frustrates me about Instagram is, on my Finsta, for example, I share a lot of things about myself. And I get kind of salty when my friends don't share about their lives. Like, I'm just like, dude, I give you access to my life. And I kind of want to know what you're doing. Like, I literally don't care. Like, send me a picture of your lunch or of your, like, walk to work. I'm just, like, very curious what you're doing.
Yeah, it's like a, if you were to have a real-time conversation with a friend and, you know, you're giving all these updates about their lives and they're gonna have to respond in some way, whether it's like, nothing really happening in my life other than I had a really good lunch, and you're like, cool, that's really great to hear, but at least you like got to hear that response.
Exactly. So that's my favorite thing. But I also think that that reciprocal content idea could be achieved in many different ways. So anyways, I have some questions for you in general about social apps. Where do you go to share unfiltered content for your friends to see? And where do you go to see that unfiltered content from your friends? Neither of us are active on BeReal. And so I'm curious, like, what are the alternatives in your life today that solve that problem for you of seeing unfiltered content?
Nowhere.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I don't think anywhere. I don't think there is anywhere. I think also potentially maybe for my part of growing up is I don't actually have to share everything with all my friends all the time. That's been something that I've been processing on my own. But there was a time for a long time that I wanted to share that unfiltered content and to like see it from other friends. We've talked about how unfiltered content can be both, you know, the highs and the lows. Like in terms of like highs, maybe we feel like we can't share that because it feels like very braggy and like rubbing it in people's faces. And then there's the lows where it's like people are going through a really hard time and they just don't want people to know about that. I feel like usually when I think about unfiltered content now, I think much less about the highs of the unfiltered content. I feel like that is something that, yes, people still might not be as willing to share, but I think it's a little bit more accepted to sharing. And then for unfiltered content, I do think like a lot more of the unfiltered content that I would expect to see is more of like the lows, you know, the hardships that people are going through. And I think when I see something like that, especially if it's asynchronous, I maybe don't really know how I can be like of the best support to my friends at the time, especially if we are far away from each other. I think the term unfiltered content is continually evolving for me. There are like Gen Z TikTokers who will come to the camera on TikTok crying their eyes out. And I'm like, whoa, like I was not expecting that at all. That's kind of a shock to come across on my feed. And so I no longer have as much of a desire for a space just for unfiltered content. I think if I want to share unfiltered content, I know that I can, you know, go to my friends like on Messenger or on text and send them some long paragraphs of text if I need to. Okay. But otherwise, I don't feel as compelled on a place like Instagram where it's like it could be like one to many or many to many to like be sharing that unfiltered content with people I don't know as well. So
Interesting. Okay. I sort of see unfiltered, more honest, in the moment content on my Finsta from my friends, but also none of them really post very much. I think I'm the biggest user of my Finsta.
I mean, I still post on my Finsta. There's really no rhyme or reason though of like, well, I think I post things on my Finsta that I would maybe normally post in my Instagram stories on my normal Instagram, but I just want it to be like more of a journal for me to look back on, because I'm not I don't really have a habit of checking the archives of my stories, because I share all sorts of things. Like I share not just things that I'm thinking of, but also things that I want to promote or things that friends are sharing out that I reshare for them. The Finsta is like purely like things that I want to remember and keep track of, and I'm okay with my friends also keeping track of that progress too.
I kind of want to dig more into what you said about unfiltered content and the definition of that, the shifting definition. What kinds of content from your friends makes you feel the most meaningfully connected to them? For example, is it seeing like a blurry photo of them from like a fun night? Or is it seeing a long reflection from them on like a private blog? Or is it getting a text from them? Like what kinds of content makes you feel the most meaningfully connected to someone?
The most immediate specific example I can think of is Hillary Reed's books, who we've had on our podcast before. She's a really good friend of mine, and she just posted on her Bookstagram this whole two-part Instagram post called How I Review Books, aka an unnecessarily long-winded explanation for how my brain works when it comes to reviewing books. And it was just so thoughtful, and that's something that, you know, I could have also seen in a more spontaneous way, but I think kind of seeing it all laid out in a way that she felt really represented her really well was really cool to see. And this is something that is very public. She has like 2,000 followers now on Instagram, but I think just because I know her, I think it feels meaningful as a result, because I'm like, I know what kind of person she is, and I know that all these things that she's saying are very, very genuine and authentic. And it's really cool that she is kind of like claiming that space on her Instagram for her to share her thoughts about, you know, how she's kind of going through these book reviews, especially when it's normally a space where she kind of turns the attention to uplifting other authors and books and whatnot.
In just hearing what you said, it reminded me that there's a big distinction between authentic and spontaneous.
Yes.
Because spontaneity can lead to authenticity, but also like deep intention and reflection is another path to authenticity. I think in all of these apps, Snap Story, Instagram Story, even Be Real, it's like, oh, if I capture the spontaneous moment, that's the authentic version of my life. But no, me sending a picture of my laptop and my face, what is so meaningful about that? It's like, okay, you're seeing that at 12 p.m., Sophia's sitting in front of her computer, like she does every single day.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of spontaneous, one spontaneous thing that I do like that makes me feel meaningfully connected with people is when they post live updates of like a funny thing that's happening to them in the moment. So for example, people who have like flights delayed and they're like, oh my God, I've been here for like hours. And then I realized I forgot something. So I had to run all the way back to TSA and like, you know, just seeing, just being along for the ride is really funny. I also had a friend who I recently reconnected with, and on his story, so he was preparing for a marathon, and he's in med school too. And I was like, I don't know how you're preparing for a marathon on top of doing med school. But he had this whole series of Instagram stories where he was just on the treadmill and he was sharing like the mile mark that he was on the treadmill and like what he was telling himself to keep him going. And he would say things like, I just think about this friend's like juicy biceps. Like that's what I'm trying to get. Or this person's juicy butt. That's what I'm hoping to get by the end of this. And I think that was so funny because it was just different aspects of like the treadmill that he was just posting and just the text. And so in that sense, it was like the blurry photo or like not as interesting photo that maybe you might see on Be Real, but I think it's the thoughts that were coming alongside telling the story that were really, really meaningful.
Yeah. I was just trying to think like if Be Real heard this conversation and they were trying to use use tech to make more of those moments happen. I think Be Real at its best can capture those moments, right? Let's just say you're on the treadmill and you get the notification. Okay, that's the content that's going to come out. But I think the challenge is for people who are in their 9-to-5. I think I might just be the wrong demographic for Be Real, which is fine.
Yeah. We got to go be digital nomads now to use Be Real.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, I liked what you said about Hillary Reed's books. Because for her, authenticity isn't her taking a snap of her reading a book.
Yeah.
For her, authenticity is like, she probably spent hours thinking about her values in writing book reviews. And then she put a lot of time into writing that and sharing that.
Definitely. Yeah. And I like that we differentiated authenticity from spontaneity, because things can still be authentic even when time has been put into it, because it is, you know, a good representation of what they are thinking. And there's probably flaws in whatever they're thinking too, but they feel comfortable enough to like be open to sharing that. And that's a very vulnerable thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to quickly chat about another app too. It'll be a shorter discussion, but there's an app called Paparazzi, which is kind of like paparazzi, but like paparazzi. And
wait, what's the difference between paparazzi and paparazzi?
They wanted to call it paparazzi because I think they say like pop a photo. So it's kind of like the word pop is kind of like a
gotcha. So it's just a letter change like from the normal paparazzi. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. And the goal is to solve the problem of people being really self-promoting on social media, where they share updates that are performative or they share like self-promoting content or branded content. So paparazzi, it's very interesting. How it works is it's essentially take your Instagram profile and imagine that, because there's several tabs on your Instagram profile, right? There's like your reels, there's your photos, and then there's the photos you're tagged in. Imagine if your profile was simply the photos you were tagged in. So your profile is composed of all the content that your friends tag you in. So there's nothing you can do to add content to your own profile. It's your friends are the only ones who can post content that shows up on your profile. Yeah, so some features include I upload a photo and I have to tag someone in it. Like I cannot add an untagged photo. If I tag you in it, you're able to remove yourself from the photo if you want. But yeah, that's the gist of the app.
Gotcha.
What do you think?
My mind went in two directions. One was that it kind of reminded me of like tagged photos on Facebook, which I do like looking at a lot, or I did like looking at them a lot just to know like what, you know, people were up to. I could see there being like a gamification of this where I maybe have a photo of like us that I really want to post and have on my feed, and I just send you that photo and I'm like, Sophia, can you post this for me? So it shows it on my feed. The other direction that my mind went was that this could be really good for memes, you know, like fandoms and stuff too, where, you know, it's like tag yourself in the meme, like, which one are you? That would be really fun, honestly. Oh,
that's so fun. Yeah. I did not even think about that.
That's because we're not memers.
Yeah.
I think that would be really, really fun if people, you know, if I went on to like Sophia, your feed and whatever fandoms you're a part of on this app, I kind of got to see like the different angles that people see you as. Like, what does Army see you as? Like, what, like, are you getting tagged as Jimin? Are you getting tagged as V? You know, things like that. I think that would be really fun to just, you know, subtly learn more about someone without having had a direct conversation about that interest that you have.
That is so funny.
Yeah.
That's so creative. I would have never thought of that.
But I think like the name paparazzi doesn't really lend itself to that meme culture, I think. I think another thing is that this could very easily, if celebrities were on this, it would very much become a paparazzi account for sure. Yes. And so this kind of terminology and naming makes you think that someone potentially would want to become like an influencer of some type on this app. But I feel like becoming an influencer is actually kind of disadvantageous to you on this app.
Yes.
Because you have no control over the content. You get stopped on the street and people are like, oh shoot, like if I take a photo, then like my photo is going to be the thing that pops up on their feed. I think that'd be really hard.
Yeah. Other interesting features that they have to, you know, we talked about like the cold start problem. Something interesting that they do is the moment you open the app, instead of seeing your feed, they just say sharing suggestions and they pull up your photos from your camera roll and they say, do you want to post this? Yes or no? Which I think is a really clever way to like prompt people to post more. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of like commenting and stuff, they have this thing where it's kind of like Discord chat where the emojis are already under the photo and you just tap whatever emoji you want to like add that emoji.
Hmm. I think because it kind of emulates Discord in that way, I think it could kind of emulate more of that fun culture, like the meme culture that I was talking about.
Right. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think memes are really good because you don't need to, you can post a meme anytime. Whereas I think a challenge for me is I don't see my friends that often. So I'm not taking photos of like real photos of their face. I think
this
that would often.
Be different in again, I think this could be very popular in college.
Yes, right. Where it's like you're walking around campus and like imagine if it's like someone's birthday and you just have everyone taking fun photos of them like at the dining hall, in class, in the library. They also have challenges. So in order to nudge you to post photos that might be older that you may have taken years and years ago, they have challenges like pop your weekend hangout, pop an athlete, pop a pose, pop your comfort person, pop someone you want to take to the beach.
That's really cool. Yeah, I like that a lot.
That's really clever because otherwise I might not think to go like 2 years into my archives to post a photo of someone.
Yeah. I will say that paparazzi does have the potential of having you be a little bit more external. And I don't know how to word this, but I feel like Instagram and a lot of these other social media apps where it's like focused on your presentation of yourself, like it can be very like focused on you all the time and very self-centered versus paparazzi with those prompts. I think it has the potential of helping you be maybe like a little bit more observant of the world and being a little bit more outward in that way. And so I do like that mindset, but I think paparazzi is honestly not a good name for it.
I think the idea was that you're going to be your friend's paparazzis. And you're right. I think it is fun to go. Imagine if you went to an event and your focus was not, oh, what photos can I take of myself? It's like, how can I capture my friend at their best, right? And they also have this other thing where it's like you can snap multiple photos in a row and it feels kind of like a live photo. It's like a photo slightly burst. Like animated GIF. Nice. Yeah, like a photo burst or a GIF.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, like between the two, I think paparazzi has a lot of potential for creativity.
Interesting. And, yes.
But between the two, I also honestly don't feel like they have good names. I think names really matter. I don't honestly really remember what I thought about the name Instagram or TikTok that much, But I think they were obscure enough where I was like, the name doesn't really matter. Paparazzi and Be Real, I feel like it sets me up. It sets up an expectation for myself of like, what is this app going to be about? Paparazzi, whatever connotations paparazzi has for you. And then Be Real, it's like, okay, I'm expecting really real unfiltered content on there. Again, and whatever unfiltered content means for you. So.
Ah, this has been so fun. I'm curious, after this whole conversation, if you had to create a social media app or add a feature to an existing social media app, is there something new you would want to invent? Okay, I'll come up with one.
Okay.
Something that I really want to see is more audio messages. This is something that I experimented with on my Finsta, if you remember. I went on my Finsta story, and instead of showing my face, I just covered the camera so you couldn't see anything. And I recorded myself talking and I turned on the auto captions. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really fun because people could hear my voice and I could talk about something instead of representing my thoughts in a photo or in text. And I think that people felt like they really connected to that story I was telling because it was an audio form.
I think you have a knack for... I think you just are kind of... How do I phrase this? Well, I think a lot of people are very visually stimulated. I think you think a lot about audio aspects. Like, you had one Instagram account where you used to kind of document sounds from different places that you would go to. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really cool. You were really excited about Clubhouse. There was another app back in the day that you told me about that also was kind of like short form podcasts with your friends, which you also talked to me about. And so I think there's something there for you to kind of share with the world, because audio is slept on a lot aside from music and podcasting. And at least in film, we're learning that audio can really like make or break a film. But people always think about the shots and the beautiful aesthetics and the performance of the actors, but the sound and the effects and the music and all of that actually adds the ambiance to the world. And so there is a lot of power in audio. And so I think you're onto something. But I kind of want to see, and on that note, I want to see that TikTok algorithm used in other places. Like, I would like it to be I would like it to be used for podcasts, TBH. I would like things to be very easily discoverable. That's the thing that is really innovative about TikTok, and I'm just kind of waiting for it to be dispersed elsewhere. My only thing with TikTok is that there are things that maybe like I just happened to be curious about, like in the moment, it's not something that I am always curious about or interested in. And then the moment I watch one of those TikToks, I start getting surfaced all of those TikToks over and over again. And it feels like it takes a while for it to learn that I actually don't want that content anymore. Yeah.
The challenge with recommendation for audio versus video is, for video, one, all of your attention is on that video. Like TikTok on For You page, it's intentional that the video is full screen, which is really helps the algorithm compared to Instagram, which is not a full screen video. And also, there are so many inputs into that algorithm. You could like it, you could share it, you could comment on it. Whereas podcasting, I think people put it on in the background and don't really pay that much attention. So even if you really liked an episode versus didn't really like an episode, that might manifest in the same behavior just because it's in the background anyways and you're not paying that much attention to it anyways. And there's not that many actions you can take. There's no such thing as like liking and commenting and sharing and whatever, whatever. And so there's fewer like indications of your interest. But yes, I just really want someone to solve audio recommendations.
That would be great. Thanks so much for preparing all of this knowledge to be put into this episode. I think it'll be really interesting to even see like a year from now, like how the landscape continues to change. Maybe there will be a TikTok like very popular app that has surfaced to the same level as TikTok and Instagram. And so it'll be really interesting to continue to document just what is happening in the world and to also document our reflections on what kind of social media landscape we would like to see and what needs we personally have in our late 20s. Like, we talked about how there were things that would have been really helpful, would have been really nice if we were in college, but we're no longer in college. So our life circumstances are different. And so I'm really curious to see how our desires and wants evolve alongside the social media landscape evolving. So thank you so much, Sophia, for sharing all of this content. If you are listening and enjoyed this conversation, think of a friend who might also enjoy it as well. Maybe they are someone who doesn't really know that much about social media or is a social media aficionado, and let them know that we're on every podcast platform. You can also share a 5-star review on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Like we were talking about with discoverability, these reviews really help our podcast become more discoverable to the right people. So if you can take some time, write us a review and rate us, that would help us out so much. And if you also want to reference some of the key points that we've made in this episode, you can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Bamboo and Glass, and we're going to share a recap there so that you can bookmark and reference for later. And with that, let us know if there are other things that you would like us to talk about, and we will see you next Sunday. Bye!